the point of this is to provide the best facts-driven show that we possibly can.
Ideally, you have a glue guy who is good.
Hashtag glue guy, hashtag locker room guy. You can't go sign Bobby Holik to $1 trillion. You can't do these things.
Very satisfying.
The absolute best NYR show in town.
This is the Liberty Blue. Rangers Podcast. With Andrew Shelby. And Nick Zeraris.
Rangers fans, welcome to Liberty Blue, the essential New York Rangers podcast. I'm Andrew Chelney, alongside Nick Zeraris. And Nick, a pretty clinical start to the playoffs for the Rangers. 4-1 win in game one to open it up. And aside from, you know, a couple mistakes, but one mistake that led to the only goal against, the Rangers overall outclassed the Caps on Sunday, I would say.
That's a testament to good prep.
Yes,
you can tell.
Yes,
you can tell they had the few off days. They talked about it a lot. Depending on which broadcast you watched, I was watching the MSG feed. If you watched the ESPN feed, I'm not sure, but
Kenny Albert.
Yeah,
Kenny
so Albert the MSG broadcast. Yeah. Yes, yeah. Him and Micheletti. They talked a lot that the Rangers had Tuesday, Wednesday off, and then they practiced Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and you can tell that they understood that this game was going to start out weird, that there was going to be that natural feeling out process. Depending on which site and which stat tracking model you look at, there were either two or three 5-on-5 shots on goal in the first period for both teams combined. Mm-hmm. There was not a lot going on either side. And I think it's a real testament to the Rangers' preparation and discipline that they waited for the game to evolve and progress to where it needed to for them to start being able to make plays, as opposed to trying to force it. That's where the Rangers have run into problems in the past, in different iterations in the postseason, even this year in the regular season, where the other team is doing something to frustrate them stylistically, whether it's clogging the middle, whether it's blocking at the blue line, forcing them to dump and chase. And the Rangers bided their time. You know, lots of stops and starts, lots of penalty kill and power play in that first period, wonky start, but the game never really felt like it got going until the Rempe goal, which kind of got moving. And I think the fact, and I was talking about this with the people I was watching the game with yesterday, you could tell that the third and fourth line were well suited and well situated for the style of the game yesterday. I think Wennberg had his best game as a Ranger yesterday. I think he was extremely noticeable. Yeah. He was really active in transition, breaking plays up, springing the puck, going the other way towards offense. If your bottom six is going to play this disciplined, this well-structured, you're going to be able to do a lot. And yeah, Kreider got on the board, Panarin got on the board. But if your bottom six is going to be able to control the flow of the game, not even talking about the goals, just control the flow of the game and really dictate how the game is going to go, they beat Washington at what Washington wanted to do. Washington wants to muck this up and turn this into an ugly hockey game. And the Rangers were more than content to play an ugly hockey game. And then once they got on the board, Washington had to start opening it up because they were starting to chase the game to try and get that goal back. Rangers score again. Washington gets the one goal you mentioned on the blown coverage. It's going to happen. It was a nice pass, too. You got to give credit where it's due. But as the game opens up, the Rangers had more and more and more. You spring Kreider. You really put the nail in the coffin. Washington gets into the shenanigans at the end of the game where Wilson gets tossed, where McElrath gets tossed. That's the key here. If the Rangers maintain their discipline and play the way they're supposed to, Washington doesn't belong on the same ice as them. It's really incumbent upon the Rangers to not beat themselves. And yesterday, they played pretty close to a perfect game.
They looked really good. This is a team that knows how not only how to play for themselves, but also how to play a style that counters what the other team is trying to play to their advantage with. So the Caps in that first period essentially clogged everything, right? Nothing in the neutral zone. Any shot opportunity that you wanted to get through was going to get blocked by somebody in front. Really kind of slow-paced style of hockey where the Caps like to thrive because they are, based off the roster, a slower team. They can't, if you try to you know, outrace them, outspeed them, you're going to win pretty much every time. Like that, the roster is not suited for running around 200-foot style brand of hockey. They thrive in a slower environment. So to be able to weather that first period, and again, the Rangers had, I think, two power plays in that first period, and they didn't get going on either of those. They had a couple of good chances, they had a couple of good shots, but they didn't score on it. And that was a period where, okay, if things didn't work, you could have seeing the Rangers try to force things maybe later on in the period of like, hey, let's try to force this. Let's try to, you know, break down their style this way. They didn't do it. They stuck to their game plan. They stuck to, hey, it's fine. We didn't score, but neither did they. Let's just take this one shift at a time. We know we have to do, and we're going to win this game anyway. And that's what they did. And that is so impressive from a planning perspective and an overall unit perspective, where everybody is on the same page of what they need to do to win a playoff hockey game. It is very impressive from beginning to end. The coaching staff, a lot of credit to them so far early on this playoff series, of how prepared they got the team to be, how prepared they were in game to have, you know, matchup differences and all these tactics, all these things. It worked really well, and the Capitals just didn't have an answer. Yeah, the one goal they scored, a nice pass, blown coverage, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't really matter. Would you like just going to get a shutout? Sure. But, you know, he also had a couple of good saves in that game as well. Overall, if you know, you can't really ask for much more from this team. They looked really good, and of course Tumbles at the end, because the game was already over, decided to be a giant piss baby and try to go after players, to which Matt Rempe laughed in his face. That's where we are, and I'm loving it.
That's the key here. That's a perfect encapsulation of the discipline required to beat a team like Washington. Washington knows on talent alone, they're not going to be able to win this series. They are going to have to muck it up. They are going to have to resort to those shenanigans. You know, you saw Spencer Carberry losing his mind at all the penalties being called as the game progressed. I thought the referees were overactive in trying to bring the temperature down. I think
Kelly Sutherland really made that first period about him.
Yeah.
That was a very Kelly Sutherland-esque period.
The counterpoint to that, and the reason I didn't have as big of an issue with it as some people might have, I think there's an understanding with these two teams, with a game that if Rempe's playing, if Tom Wilson's playing, the referees feel they need to call everything to keep the temperature down so that there's nothing ridiculous, because, you know, it's certainly possible. I expected when the game got to 3-1, 4-1, I expected something stupid to happen, whether it was Rempe, whether it was Tom Wilson, whether it was McElrath or someone else. I expected something stupid to happen at some point, because that's typically when it does happen. When the game is out of hand, people are frustrated and they have to lash out because they have to feel like they're important. They have to feel like they're impacting the game. But speaking of Rempe, speaking about the fourth line in general, the play that sets up that first goal it's weird how it developed, because the pass Gaudreau made to Vizi was terrible. It was behind him. Vizi had to slow down, turn around. If he received the pass cleanly, they could have went right to the net. But instead, because it wasn't a good pass, Vizi sends it down low. Rempe takes the long way around, which brings the Washington defender with him. Gaudreau goes down low, and the Rangers have two on two behind the net, where it's Gaudreau, Rempe, and then two Washington defenders. Vizi is hovering around the red line a little bit off to the right, and Rempe goes all the way around. Gaudreau one touches it to Vizi, and Vizi doesn't get a lot on the pass to Rempe, but because Rempe went the long way around, because him and Gaudreau were able to win that puck behind the goal line, he walks back out in front without anyone within 5-10 feet of him. Vizi's wide open to receive the pass from Gaudreau, and that's the type of goal it's going to take the longer these playoffs go. The Rangers think they're too good for that. It sounds silly to say, but the Rangers think they're too good for the dump and chase, grind it out philosophy of hockey that's requisite with playoff success. You know, that's always been the knock on the Rangers' high-end players, that they don't thrive in that type of environment, that they're not particularly well situated for playoff hockey. But in an ideal world, your top six is going to do what they're good at, and your bottom six is going to bring that element to your game. And you saw it yesterday. They thoroughly thrashed Washington in the minutes. When their fourth lines went head-to-head, it was 11-8 scoring chances, 0.4 to 0.1 expected goals, and 2-1 high danger. And then Cooley, Wenberg, Kako just dominated. 11-2 scoring chances, 0.5 expected goals to zero, and 3 high danger chances to zero. Thorough domination, and that's where the depth comes in. And then in the minutes where Zibanejad was head-to-head against Strome or against McMichael, and then vice versa, Trocheck against Strome or McMichael, the Rangers won those minutes too. That's where you get into the idea that it's all about the discipline and waiting for the game to come to you. Now, you're not always going to have that luxury of the other team not being good, where they kind of need to play a certain way if they're going to be successful. And against a good team, the Rangers can't be as patient as they were in that game. You can't waste a whole period like they did in the first. But with the game they had, and I'll tie it up and throw it back to you on this note, I think the reason I had so much confidence about the way that the game was developing, and part of the reason I feel they were so adequately prepared, was the usage of the various lines throughout the game. Like, Rempe took that penalty, which it wasn't a penalty.
No, it wasn't.
If you wanted to call boarding, maybe, but that definitely wasn't charging.
He literally slowed down. Like, yeah, it was the opposite of charging. He didn't speed up.
Yeah.
He wasn't directly skating into, I think it was Protus that he hit.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't directly, you know, bash his skull into the, like, my man slowed down. He, like, gently, when you talk about a 6'8 behemoth is a relative term, but he definitely let up before the hit to still get a charging call after all that. That's that call was only made because of who it was, as opposed to what the play actually was. It was not a fan of that.
And that's, you know, that's the danger. If you're going to play Rempe, which I imagine the Rangers will continue to do so until he gives them a reason not to, he's going to get the extra scrutiny that he may or may not deserve just because he's so big. Everything looks a little more dangerous, a little more physical when it's a guy who, as you said, is a 6'8" behemoth.
Like the third goal, and the third goal the Rangers scored that was the last of that 2-minute onslaught. I forget who it was, but somebody essentially ran into Rempe's elbow.
Yeah.
And was complaining about it for a few minutes.
That was a weird play.
Ray Ferraro, because I saw the, you know, because if you watch the highlights, they have the ESPN highlights. And the Ray Ferraro on the broadcast was like, yeah, he just ran into Rempe's elbow. Like, there's nothing there.
It looked like they were just two guys leveraging for position.
But because Rempe is so big, him literally just existing, it could be an elbow to the head because of where his elbow is. His elbow is much higher than most people's elbow because he's so tall. So just be like,
and the
not
other
every
part
hit
of that.
That he hits, like not every hit that he lays out. And also, he didn't really do anything. He just kind of stood there.
The other part of that play that I found weird was they never showed a great angle of it on the broadcast, but to me, it looked like Rempe hit him in the chest and his arm went up as they were leveraging for position, which by definition is not an elbow to the head because the initial point of contact was the chest. And I know everybody likes to turn these replays into the Zapruder film when it comes to elbows and where points are getting hit. But for the purposes of this conversation, if he's going to play, which I imagine he will stay in until he doesn't, the fact that he got the second most minutes he's ever gotten in a game yesterday, I think that bodes well for his fortune in the lineup. The fact that the Capitals' fourth line just isn't that good and the Rangers' fourth line was able to really press the agenda of how they wanted to play. I thought the Rangers did a really good job of utilizing last change and setting up matchups that were favorable, giving Zibanejad offensive zone starts when they could, giving Trocheck offensive zone starts when they could, and occasionally throwing Gaudreau out there with Wenberg and Vizi, where if it's a defensive zone start, let's get two centers out there. Let's try and win this faceoff. And if we win the faceoff, Wenberg goes off immediately, Rempe comes on. I think you saw the benefits of the preparation, the intense practice, and a coach who's just got a good feel for his group. Now, it's one game. I'm sure at some point in this conversation, we'll talk about how a series doesn't really get going until there's some adversity. And there will be adversity unless Washington is as bad as they look. And then maybe this is a 4 or 5 gamer and there's not a lot to talk about. But when it goes as well as it did in game one, I think the main takeaway you want to have is A, why were they successful? They waited Washington out. Then as they started to get going, Washington had to open up and the Rangers were able to take advantage of those openings. And then number two, you can't get too high off of it. I do think that was a problem last year against the Devils where they got out to 2-0 and they really felt, oh, we're just going to walk through this. And they really should have won game three, in all honesty. They lost in overtime and that kind of swung the series and gave the Devils some juice. If you have the Devils 3-0, you're more likely than not wrapping that series up in five or six games. I don't think Washington has the firepower. Washington doesn't have the it doesn't have the requisite level of talent to give the Rangers that type of problem. For this series to benefit Washington, it needs to go six or seven games, and they need to keep these games 2-1, 3-2. Washington does not score. Washington is bottom five in the league in 5-on-5 goals. The Rangers are not great at 5-on-5. Washington is worse. As long as you keep these games if the Rangers score three goals a game, they will win the series in four games. I don't think Washington is going to score more than three goals in a game unless you give it to them.
What's lost in the shuffle here, which I want to highlight, is Panarin got on the board. He scored a goal. So did Kreider. These are storyline because, you know, you could talk about, you could highlight how Panarin didn't have a goal in the seven games against the Devils, and there's so many question marks and all these things. And yeah, he scored 49 goals the regular season. Oh, but how is he going to perform in the playoffs, different beats, etc.? And I understand it's Washington, which you don't want to take lightly, but at the same time, you understand that you know, you could be Dallas right now playing Vegas. You could be Winnipeg right now playing the Avalanche. Like, Of all the opponents that you could have faced in the first round, the Capitals are not the Stars, the Knights, the Avs, you know, et cetera. So yeah, you might take a look at it and say, okay, well, Panarin's got a goal, yeah, but it's against Washington, whatever. But it's still important because he knows more than anybody else, and he's talked about it publicly, how important it is for him to get on the goal sheet. He talked about how important it is for him, you know, to not have zero goals in seven games, how it's important for him to, you know, to have that shooter mentality, a part of what's led him to have 49 goals in the regular season this season. Like, all of this led to, okay, game one, and he's already scored a goal. It is important that this doesn't get lost, you know, in the recap of that game. Kreider, same thing. Where is this burst of speed coming at? Like, we all know that Kreider's a fast player, doesn't use it as much as we'd like him to. My man saw a straight line and he booked it. Now, he only has the one shootout move, the one breakaway move that he never deviates from, but you know what? It worked, so it's fine. It doesn't matter. He scored the goal too, and that's also important. Like, this was another 5-on-5 goal, something that we've talked about Kreider not having enough of, and he did it and he scored. These are important, you know, under the radar kind of B-tier, C-tier, C-tier storylines that could be A-tier or S-tier if they get prolonged and they become more glaring and more of an issue. The fact that two guys that had questions, now again, I understand Kreider, I think, is either tied for or like has the most goals in playoff goals in franchise history. He's also been here a very long time. And the question mark surrounding him was based off of the regular season, where this man scoring a lot of power play goals, where is he 5-on-5, etc. A lot of these questions right now, and it's only been one game. I get that it's against Washington, but it's really good to get ahead of these storylines early and really build that confidence as you head into later down in this series, the next series, etc. Than to, okay, well, you beat Washington in four or five games, let's say. Oh, that's great. Oh, but Kreider doesn't have a goal. Zibanejad doesn't have a goal. Panarin doesn't have a goal. Oh, well, if they couldn't score against Washington, okay, well, maybe they're gripping their sticks a little bit tighter against, I would imagine, is Carolina. Maybe it's the Islanders. I don't know, but my prediction was Carolina, so I'm going to stick to it. That could have led to a bigger issue, but I'm really glad that a lot of the early concerns are being dealt with.
One other point, you mentioned the Panarin goal, and the Vizi goal also applies to this. The preparation, those preset face-off plays, and at some point we might have to build a statue for the fact the Rangers can win face-offs now. I don't put a ton of stock into them as a big picture, like,
I think that's Michael Pekka's doing.
Yeah, I'm 99% sure it's Michael Pekka who responsible for this, because, you know, that's been a knock on the Rangers. I don't think faceoffs matter all of that much. I think individual faceoffs have a little bit more value than the overall, and, you know, how much it translates to, well, what exactly qualifies as a win? Is that when the center wins the puck? Or does that require the team to have possession as well to quantify as a win? But both of those goals, the Panarin goal, the Vizi goal, and the Panarin goal in the game against Ottawa on Monday of last week, those goals all happen because they get a faceoff win. They have leverage on the weeks on the side of the faceoff circle that's closer to the net, which is producing a screen in front of the goalie. And because they win the puck clean, whether it's Vizi or Panarin coming across on their strong side, that's something else the Rangers do a lot of on faceoffs, and I thought they did a good job of yesterday, was putting guys on their offhand side for the purposes of, if they win a faceoff, they're instantly in a position to shoot. When you win that puck, you have the screen. That's a really good look. And in a game like yesterday, where there just wasn't a lot of space until it got going, those little victories, those little face-off wins, you get the screen, and then you get the puck in the hand of a high-end shooter like Panarin, and you give him a clean look from between the circles on a goalie who, Charlie Lindgren's had a nice season, but one-on-one with the goalie, you expect someone like Panarin to score more often than not because of how good he is. When you have those little things, when you have that going for you, you have those little face-off plays where even if they don't result in a goal, they produce a dangerous scoring chance. You have the forecheck generated goals, the one Rempe does. Then you have, once the game's really opened up, there's a lot of space. Washington's chasing it. You get that puck. I believe Zibanejad sprung Kreider. You get that win. You spring Kreider straight through. You put the game away. That, I think, really encapsulates what makes this team ceiling so high and why this coaching staff really deserves a lot of kudos. They have really tinkered with this lineup. They are doing every little thing they can to put these guys in a position to succeed. And the fact that the lines have been so consistent all year, I think, speaks to the comfort level they all have with each other. And the fact that they all play a little bit differently style-wise, the different lines, it gives them a diversity of approach on offense. That is important. We've seen the Rangers' offense dry up a lot. You go back and watch the tape, and I'm a sicko, and I have gone back and watched the tape. You go watch games 3 through 6 against Tampa Bay from 2022. The offense is just non-existent. They can't get the puck to the middle. They don't engage Tampa Bay below the goal line. They don't win loose pucks. They refuse to cycle. When they get point shots, they're blocked, and they go back the other way. For the Rangers to manufacture offense consistently, that has to be an element of their game. And eventually, it's going to be on Zibanejad, Kreider, Panarin, Trocheck, Lafreniere, etc. Speaking of Lafreniere, him making that one goal happen by just blowing that dude up in the corner, Lafreniere's got a little bit of pain in the ass to him that does matter. We talk about a lot that the Rangers, their high-end guys, are all too nice, like Zibanejad, Panarin, Kreider. They're too nice of guys. If Lafreniere wants to be a little bit of a dickhead, that would be very welcome. It's needed.
It's funny. It's funny because that's kind of what he's turning into. And I tweeted this out what had happened. Whether it was a penalty or not, you can argue a wall. You know, you can argue to a wall about. But the fact that it wasn't called a penalty after every single breath was called a penalty in period one was astonishing. I could not believe. Like, and I, you know, I'll take it as a Rangers fan, right? Like, that's great that it didn't result in the call. Should it have been? I don't know. But at the end of the, like, the fact that, you know, Kelly Sutherland is called 4 penalties in period one, everything was a penalty. And then that happened, I think, in front of him. And he, like, didn't do anything about it. Was just objectively like, huh? If you're gonna, like, huh? Like, it was, I saw that. I'm like, okay, all right. Caps power play. Here we go again. Kelly Sutherland show. And he was staring right at it. No call. Rangers score. I'm like, all right, hands up. Thought that was a penalty. I'll take it. All good. I just wish things were called consistently, but that's every period of every game ever. So I don't know.
The longer series go on, typically the fewer penalties are called. I'll be very curious to see how game 2 is officiated tomorrow in that respect, if it stays the same way. And one more thing on game 1 before we open it up a little bit more general. Their willingness to play how the game was going as opposed to forcing it. I think that's part of why they looked so good, that they were pretty well, they understood how the game was going to go. They didn't get flustered. They didn't get deterred. They understood where the game was going. They were comfortable going there and made it happen. And now you get the natural evolution of a series. Now, if Washington can adjust, how they choose to adjust, that's another conversation. But you have to feel that so far, and, you know, one game, but the preparation really put them in a position to succeed. The guys on the team understand what they need to do. And the mistakes, you know, a couple bad line changes, the goal, but that was a nice pass. You can live with that. But
sure,
they held Ovechkin to no shots on goal. They did a great job of making Tampa Bay had maybe Washington had maybe two
Washington
good scores.
2022 clips, huh?
Yeah, I mean, realistically, yeah, when you do show prep, you got to. But Washington had maybe two good scoring chances the whole game. Shesterkin only had to make 20 saves. I have to go and do the research and see what the fewest saves in a Rangers playoff win is in the last like 10, 15 years, because that's got to be in the conversation for the fewest. 20 saves in a Rangers playoff game. You would assume this game was played in like 2006 if it were a 20-save game, but they looked great. The underlyings were beautiful. Everybody had a moment or two. Like, even Trouba got the one big hit in there. Zibanejad sprung Kreider. Roslovic had a couple nice plays. Wenberg was noticeable. Every single person in the lineup had at least one noticeable play that was positive. And that's really encouraging, because there have been games where it's two or three guys trying to drag the entire lineup along. And the more guys you have, the less drop-off there is per line change, the greater opportunities you have. And the Rangers had a great opportunity in front of them, and they did not mess around. They did not force it. They did not do what they typically do. They didn't make it more difficult than it needed to be. That's what we've talked about a lot in the prep for this series. The Rangers need to take care of their business and not do what they always do. That was not a New York Rangers-esque performance yesterday. That was what a good hockey team does in the playoffs.
It's great. It's beautiful to watch, eh, Nick? When you don't have to, you know, be sweating bullets because your hockey team is forcing passes across the ice, as opposed to, you know, doing what they did yesterday and just letting the game come to them. It's just a really good sign overall that the Rangers, you know, understand the process, the plan going into the playoffs as a whole. I mean, the plan's obviously gonna change depending on who they play, but the overall thesis of letting the game come to you, as opposed to trying, you know, everything in your power to score 8 goals in the first period of a hockey game. It's the whole blueprint of what they are trying to do really shone bright in game number one. It's really great for them, you know, like we talked about, it was as perfect of a game as you could ask for realistically. Yeah, would you like a shout out? You want to be pedantic about it, you can. But at the end of the day, they played about as well as you know would want in a playoff game, and just hoping that they take that and they build off of it instead of things that they've done in seasons before, where this is easy, this is fine, and then things quickly become not fine, and that's how the Devils series happened.
I think it's also interesting because if you remember, everyone remembers the Rangers got out to a 2-0 lead the first 10 minutes of the game of game one against Pittsburgh, and then that game went to 3 overtimes. The Rangers did not play around. They kept trying to score,
yeah,
but they didn't break down their structure. They stuck to what they were trying to do. They greatly limited what Washington was able to do offensively.
Washington didn't have a shot on goal for like the first half of the third period. Yeah. Like, that is insane.
The Rangers did a great job blocking shots. They did a great job clogging up shooting lanes and passing lanes, and really forced Washington, where the only way Washington was going to score in that game yesterday was a defensive breakdown or somebody making a really spectacular play. If you can limit the opponent to that, and it's really hard to do that in the playoffs. Most teams have a little bit more than Washington does. But for the purposes of this conversation, when you are that well equipped for the situation, it's really nice. It's kind of like taking batting practice. That's kind of how it felt yesterday, where the Rangers knew what was coming. They were able to tee it up, line it up, get good, solid contact, wear it down, and then over the course of the game, prosecute how you want to play. Set yourself up for success. And the Rangers did that through and through. Opening it up real quick, we'll bounce around. I hope they play best of 15 between Colorado and Winnipeg.
What a series, huh? What a first game that was. I tweeted this out the last night. It's like, imagine you're Joe Sakic and you watch your team. At the time it was five, but you know, they scored the six with like 20 seconds to go. Imagine scoring six goals on Connor Hellebuyck and losing because your goalie can't stop a beach ball. You got to be sick to your stomach if you're Joe
Sakic.
I was
shocked they kept Georgiev in as long as they did. Yeah. Not because the game that they were going to win the game if they changed the goalie. But I think more so, and this is true in a lot of these series, we've seen it historically, a lot of your goalie management in the playoffs is more about their psyche than their actual sure. performance. Like, it really might have benefited them to get Georgiev out of there after five, just to be like, okay, that game's over with. It's done. It happened. There's nothing you can do. You're probably going to have... I understand they didn't do that because they felt like they had a chance to come back in the game. And
they also didn't have their backup goalie.
Yeah, they're down to...
So they had to use their E-bug, essentially, as their backup, so...
They couldn't do that conceptually, but for the purposes of the conversation, we can talk about this in regards to Boston, Toronto as well. You know, the goalie management matters a lot. I'm curious to see how that series develops. That crowd was electric. I was watching that game with headphones on, and the static feedback on a couple of the Winnipeg goals like made me jump a little bit how loud it was. That's a great crowd. That's a great hockey city. It's really good to see that town get rewarded with a really good hockey team. That series should be awesome. The Islanders, I thought, played pretty well against Carolina, in all honesty. I thought that game was 1-1 for a large stretch of the game. Carolina wasn't able to do a lot of what they typically do. I thought Varlamov did a nice job of keeping the Islanders in that game when the Carolina would have long sustained periods of offensive zone time. But I thought Carolina looked uncomfortable, and it's really hard to make Carolina look uncomfortable, especially at home. That's another arena that's really loud, a lot of jump. I thought the Islanders did a really nice job. I'm very curious to see how their game two goes tonight.
My question is, if that is the best the Islanders are going to look and they still lose, then what is their outlook, right? Because if they did everything, if they did, you know, a lot of things right on the ice, they made Carolina uncomfortable. They capitalized on a lot of opportunities. Anderson was really good in that game. He made a couple of really big saves. They did a lot of things right. Carolina on their heels for some of the game. Didn't have a whole lot of opportunities, you know, either, and they still lost the game.
Islanders don't have the goal scoring. No, that's the biggest issue. Listen, they have enough talent.
I understand that, but it's just one of those things where it's like, they're doing a lot of things right, but does it ultimately matter if they did a lot of things right in game one and they still didn't win?
That's the real conundrum of it. You know, they have enough talent. And their goaltending situation is strong enough, and they have good they've played a lot better defensively the last month or so. I'll give them the credit there. The real conundrum is they're going to have to win these games 2-1 or 3-2. They have no margin for error defensively or in net. If they concede 3 or 4 to Carolina, they're probably not winning. In all honesty, they're probably not going to win. They have probably the second smallest margin for error of any team in the playoffs behind Washington, because Washington also really struggles to score goals at 5-on-5. Same case with the Islanders. I was talking about it with somebody yesterday. You know, the Islanders have 4 top 6 forwards, and then they're manufacturing the other 2 spots. You know, McLean had the goal. He was playing up there. He's 27 and like a career AHLer. They have a lot of guys in their lineup like Holmstrom and Fashing. Fashing didn't play on Saturday, but guys who are fine, but those aren't top 6 forwards on a good team. I thought Florida Tampa Bay was pretty good.
A fun game.
I thought Tampa Bay had a lot of chances. When Tampa Bay is humming, that unit is insane. Like, I thought that when Stamkos got that puck, I thought, oh, we're going to overtime. I didn't think there was a chance in the world that wasn't going in. Bob was great. If Bob is going to be that good, Florida's terrifying.
Yeah. Well, they are, and that's one of the things about the Florida Panthers that are, it's always going to be the question mark. of, yeah, they're a fantastic offensive team. Their defense is stifling. You can't really get much, you know, going past them. But the question surrounding their goaltending has been an issue for, you know, as long as Bobrovsky has been there of, yeah, he's been good, and you've seen the talent. You've seen the incredible saves and the, you know, shots that he's stopped where he has no business of stopping. And then you've seen the other side of Bobrovsky in the past where every goalie on the planet should be stopping these shots, and he lets it go and it's in the back of the net. So that's always been the question mark with Florida, is what version of Bobrovsky are you going to see? So far through one game in the playoffs, he's looked excellent. And he looked excellent last playoffs as well, to which maybe the fear has been mitigated a little bit because he's been relatively consistently playing, you know, well and to his ceiling. But the question always remains with him is, okay, well, can he continue that for another playoff run? For, I guess, with Florida, the hope is, of course, especially because you paid him $10 million to do it. But with him, you kind of never know, regardless of how many good starts he might have in a row. All it takes is one bad start for the questions to come back because of how rocky he's been in the past. So as long as he keeps playing well, the Panthers are a terrifying team, and I don't want to see them in the playoffs. But if Bobrovsky starts to falter, they have cracks.
Toronto's fucked if Nylander doesn't come back. I'm just going to be blunt and say it. Their offense was non-existent in that game. I understand that series has a little bit different energy, that it's more than just the rosters, the history, the scars. It's all very real. Swayman was great. The Bruins have got the best goalie tandem in the league. There's no argument about that. They have the luxury of, do we want the seventh best goalie in the league or the fifth best goalie in the league? It's great when you have options like that. Toronto, as soon as they were down 1-0, you immediately saw them start to break down, them trying to force those long stretch passes. When they threw the fourth line out there, you saw Reeves and Camp trying to throw hits to get guys going, taking themselves out of the play to do so, which, you know, that's the conundrum when you
start chasing. Well, that led to the first goal for Boston.
Yeah.
Where Ryan Reeves was on the ice, and stop me if you've never heard this before, Nick, but when, you know, we've seen Ryan Reeves take a hit instead of doing anything hockey related, that leads to a 2-on-1 for Boston, and they score. Like, hitting is great. Hitting, you know, I'm not here to suggest that you should never hit or you should never be the hashtag Sam Haber, hashtag great guy, but you have to pick your spots. Ryan Reeves, instead of understanding that the play was going the other way, went to finish his check. That led to the Leafs not having enough men back because there was one of their defensemen was pitching in deep. Ryan Reeves should have been the fall guy for that defenseman. He chose to finish a hit, 2-on-1 for Boston, and they score. This is a story that everyone in the NHL, I guess, except for Toronto, knows the ending to. We've read the book. We know how this ends. Toronto instead was like, oh, but we don't, so we're going to give this guy a 3-year contract. And shocker, he did what everybody expected him to, and it led to the Bruins' first goal. So it's just a matter of, you know, can the Leafs bounce back? Nylander supposedly is better today. He's practicing. They'll see how he feels. I would imagine he plays, even if he's not 100. I mean, no one's ever 100% in the playoffs, like, you know, yada yada. But clearly, he's not even close. If he sat out game one, I don't know how much better 2 days is going to make him, but I would have to imagine that they are going to try everything in their power to get him to play, even if he's nowhere close to 100%, because he just makes that first line so much more dangerous, if only on paper, because he's injured. But even then, he's still dangerous because he's William Nylander.
I thought Nashville played really well last night. I thought that game, them in Vancouver, I think Vancouver will end up winning. I picked them to win in 7, but you saw the formula for Nashville. They had Vancouver on edge. They forced Vancouver to kind of play a little less structured, a little more open-ended than they're typically comfortable with. Vancouver ended up pulling away. That third line, the one we had talked about, Lindholm, Dakota, Joshua, and Connor Garland.
Joshua had a great game.
Yeah, he had two. When you're getting depth scoring, man, it suddenly becomes a lot easier to win hockey games when guys you don't expect to score. And that was the case there. Last one, Dallas and Vegas gets going tonight. I think if not Winnipeg, Colorado, I think that's the best series on paper.
I can't wait.
If everybody's going, it sounds like Stone's going to play. It sounds like...
Of course he is. I mean...
I can't wait. I woke up early to go to the gym before we recorded, so I wouldn't have to worry about missing. I will be... As soon as I'm done recording, I'm going to go chop this up, edit this. I will not be leaving my desk after about 6:30. I will be at my desk from 6:30 till about 2 a.m.
I'm very excited. We're recording this a little bit early because I will be in attendance for Knicks and Sixers game two tonight. Shout out Josh Hart. I mean, I will run through brick walls for Josh Hart. Let me be the first.
I'll run through a brick wall for fucking Thibs.
So would I. I saw a thing that was like, for the third year in a row, players voted Thibs the coach they would least like to play for. And I will rebuttal that with skill issue. Skill issue. That just means you don't want to work hard enough to win. Like, that's because Thibs requires everybody to give everything they have at all times. That's the kind of coach Thibs is. And this is not a basketball punk, I get it, all that. But like, for you watch somebody, you watch a team like the Knicks that have won 50 games with a head coach that is not only a great statistician, but is the kind of coach that really wants the best out of players. And the players that really want to play for somebody like that are going to have career years. And you've seen that, throughout Tibbs's tenure in New York. And for players to be like, nah, I don't want that, that's a skill issue. That is plainly and bluntly a skill issue and nothing else.
They finally gave Tibbs a team crazy enough to play for him. That's the biggest thing. He's got a bunch of guys who just genuinely get it, and not everybody gets it. That's one of the real conundrum. And the other series, Oilers and Kings, I look forward to watching it. I expect the Oilers to kind of do what they've done. Cam Talbot is an enigma, as is Stuart Skinner. That game could very well be 7-6, like the Winnipeg Colorado game, and that won't be because of the high end talent. That'll be because of the goalie's inability to play goalie. It's a great time to be a sports fan. I will not be sleeping a lot the next month or so. I'm very happy we're here, man.
If we're now deep in the playoffs, I mean, we got the next 6 weeks, 8 weeks, depending on how long these series go, to devote entire chunks of our lives to. This is really like this is the best time of the year, and it's the best time, one, because our favorite team is in it, sure, but also watching the other teams kill each other. When it's not your team and you're watching a 7-6 duel to see first to 10 wins, it's so much fun. It is a lot of fun if you're a casual fan, a serious fan, what have you. These games are incredibly, incredibly fun to watch. And if you're just getting into the sport, watching like playoff, that's why a lot of casual fans will hop on during the playoffs, because everybody is doing, giving 100% every shift, every play. This is the time to watch if you're not as serious of a fan as the psychopaths that we are. We're watching 82 plus other teams plus all these other games. Like we're deep in the depths of hell, Nick and I, in terms of this sport. We are in it for the long haul. But if you're a casual fan, just to get there and watch playoff hockey is super fun, super cool. I can't wait for the next 6 to 8 weeks.
I mean, I went out on Saturday night to watch the Knick game with a bunch of my friends, and we went to a bar, and there were like these 6 or 7 old heads sitting at the bar cheering and applauding for every single basket in a basketball game for 3 hours.
That's a lot.
It means more, man.
Yeah.
It really does mean more. That'll do it for this week's edition of the Liberty Blue Podcast. Make sure you are subscribed wherever you get your podcasts. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify if you are watching on YouTube. Subscribe, hit the like button. Let us know what you like the most about the Rangers game 1 performance. We will talk to you guys real soon.
Later.